Welcome to the To Faithful Men podcast. This project started in 2006 to preserve old sermon and study tapes of Wiley Flanagan, Hassel Wallace, and Mike Strebel. 2 Timothy 2:2 says, "And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also."
Leave it over and be. Let's talk some more. We'll ask some questions. Let's last this verse 18 though. That number business there, is there any more to be said about that?
Oh yeah, I should give you
Is it really of any value?
Well, no, I don't think so. I don't think it'd be worth the studying, but I've enjoyed studying about it. Now this 13th chapter, now talking about this beast that was wounded, you know, all the commentators who are critical, by critical I mean rational, who don't believe in the miraculous or who believe in having the liberty to say, well, this is not so here, this is taken from a myth. They'll all tell you that the 13th chapter of Revelation comes from the tradition about Nero. Nero, his father, he was a terrible brute as far as history's concerned. He killed a man, his best friend. He gave him a glass of wine, he drank it, and he filled it up again, told him, drink it, have another drink. Because he is taking nothing. Man wouldn't drink the second drink, and Nero's daddy killed him. And one day, he was driving down the Appian Way, and in his chariot, and run over a little girl. And just out of mere, wanted to see what had happened when he run over. And, of course, when Nero was born, his wife, Agrippina, was just as mean and cruel as a woman as he was a man. That is Nero's mother. But when Nero was born, his dad said to her, said, well, he won't ever be worth anything. He said, let's kill him. He said, anybody that was born who had parents like he was and like she was, that he didn't mount to anything anyway. And he just proposed to kill his own boy. But they didn't. But anyway, it wasn't long. When he was 3 years old, Nero was adopted and was raised. And the woman that adopted him wanted to raise him right. But the best she could do was provide a dancer and a janitor, so to speak, that looked after the place as tutors of the boy. Well, it wasn't long, though. That didn't last too long. And then when they killed three or four more people, and Nero grew up, of course, they killed everybody in line she wanted to make Nero king. And she had everybody killed that was in line or in it stood in the way. Nero becoming king. Well, when Nero, just a youngster, of course, he was married to a woman, as the custom was, and wasn't long till he had her put to death. And then he married his girlfriend, and wasn't long till he kicked her to death. And so when the city burned, why, Nero was glad of it. Even if Nero didn't do it, he rejoiced in it because Nero he was a builder. He liked to build things. And for 5 years, when he first ascended the throne, after they made him king, because they had to kill everybody in his way, it wasn't long till nothing stood in the way of him being king. But he didn't want to be king. At first, he liked to paint. He liked to fool with blocks and buildings and design things, architect. And he was a pretty, history says he was pretty fair at that. And he got Seneca and Burrus, his mother did, to tutor him, to be a king. And they, Seneca and Burrus, were two of the greatest Romans of that time. And and for 5 years, they were doing the reigning while Nero was out painting and fiddling around, learning how the architecture and so on. And Rome had their best, actually the best years under Nero, the 5 years that he didn't try to do anything. But at the end of that 5 years, he came back, boy, and he pitched a hissy. He started a rampaging on murder and everything. And after this, after he'd take Christians. And he had a big garden, and he would put pitch on them, have them dose, or, you know, just douse, just completely covered, saturated with pitch, and they lit them, put fires to them, and when they'd have a party, an evening's carousal, why, there was a great circle in his garden with killing Christians, burning them to death, see, making torches, human torches out of it. And some, in order to have a different, have a little variety, he took sacks, put put that over the put skins rather, you know, animal skins over these Christians, and put them out there and sicked his hunting dogs after them, and killed them that way. And then he'd take. There's something like a tow sack, put rocks in it, put the Christian in there, and then throw them in the river. Just to see, to sink it, you know. And stuff like that. Well, but the people of Rome, after he turned and had Seneca murdered, his advisor, tutor, the one that had been ruling, and Burrus, after he had those two put to death, well then the Roman army, began to get wise, and they started, rebellion against him, and they, of course, he found out about it, and Nero escaped and committed suicide. And this, the part that it has to do with this, what these Bible commentators say, tell us that this 13th chapter of Revelation is the that. Coming back to death, to life, is Nero, because the tradition grew up that Nero wasn't dead. They never did. The masses in Rome never saw the body afterwards, and it was withheld, and only a few knew that he was dead, and it spread everywhere that he wasn't dead, that he just fled. And they fled to Persia, Iran, where all this trouble is going on right now over there in Iran. Well, after they found out that he was dead, they said, well, he'll come to life again. They just didn't believe that Nero was dead, you know. And they said, well, the ones that was still worshiping him believed in him, you see. And they brought this up. And then in the Sibylline articles, an apocalyptic literature, which was written between the time that John wrote, before the fall of Jerusalem, and the interbiblical period, there was many books written about the future and the hopes and dreams of the Jews, and like the Book of Enoch and Barnabas and Maccabees and all of those books. Well, in the Sibylline articles, they taught that, they made the direct statement that Nero would come to life again. And, Barclay, William Barclay, Sweat, the other men of that name, says that John is writing about Nero, that this beast here is Nero. And, and they say the number 666 is Nero in the Hebrew language. When his name is spelled in Hebrew, the Hebrew letters when they're their numerical value is put down, they total up 666. 666. So, now all of you old commentators, that'll tell you that that's what the name, that it's the name of Nero. Well, the scripture says the number is the number of man. That's one thing that leads you to believe that, that this person is a man. Now, I know men like, Ladd, you got his book, hey, when a Ladd won't take, he won't believe half I said tonight about it, because Ladd believes, the 12th chapter of Revelation. And he don't believe that, that Revelation 13 describes two individuals. And actually three, Satan and the two beasts. But, now, if the first beast is an empire, if it does represent a nation, authority, a power, a ruling element, in the background, somebody's got to be a spokesman for that country, for that nation, if it's a dictator. And that beast is so much the empire that he could say, like Napoleon, you know, I'm France, or I'm it, in other words. So that's the reason why I say, I believe that I don't know what nation it'll be. The book tells you that that this fourth kingdom, Daniel says that in the kings, that these 10 horns represent 10 kings. He says they are 10 kings that shall arise. And Nebuchadnezzar's dream was that in the days of these 10 kings, see, talking about a stone coming out of the mountain, striking the image. It didn't strike him in the head. It didn't strike him in the shoulders, in the thighs, in the legs. It struck him in the feet, in the toes. 10 toes. In the days of these 10 kings shall arise this little horn. Paul says that the Antichrist, the man of sin, must come forth. Same man, talking about the same man, the man that will claim all of these authority, these powers, and claim to be worshipped, and demand that he be worshipped. See, and so. So that, but the number of the beast, I mean, that's the best way. Whoever it is, I see no sign. It's to be put either in the head or the hand. It'll be known whatever it is.
But you do think there's going to be a one central ruling figure the last time that's going to kind of unleash a final fury?
Yes. I think there'll be personality. He's going to have a lot of helpers. There'll be a great number all over the world, because this world is not affected. It's not changed. When the Lord Jesus Christ come back, people that think that he's going to flip a bomb and this ain't going to poof, and we're in eternity. See, that idea comes from the angel, this great, mighty, strong angel that comes down from heaven, puts his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the earth, and says, time shall be no more. See? But it's a mistranslation. That's a wrong meaning, and very much so. It's not when time shall be no more, it's that delay shall be no more. In other words, these interludes, these events in history, we've come to the end of them, and the Lord's not going to delay. There's not going to be much delay anymore. In other words, it's not going to be putting off. In other words, it's still not out in the future. So it's going to be right at hand. But we sing that song, you know, when the roll is called up there, up yonder, and times will be more, what is it?
When the trumpet of the Lord.
The trumpet of the Lord shall sound, and time shall be no more. See? Well, now, there's no such thing as time not being any more. Eternity is nothing but a continuation of time. It's just not end, yeah. But you can't separate time from eternity other than, as far as we know, it's time. It just goes on. It's endless without end. Time, we think of denoting the time when this present order of things, see, the earth as it now exists. When it's changed, then begins eternity. You know, that's when we think of eternity.
But look back over that, though. And 12:11, and you said it, you know, sometimes if people had were told the truth, they might not feel these men now. Would you say a little bit more about that?
Chapter 12, verse 11?
Yeah.
And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and love not their lives unto death. All right? Well, that's, of course, that's a description of the overcome. See, this whole book, it started out in the letters to the seven churches of Asia, in addressing them, to him that overcometh. There was a promise given. You know, we have seven overcoming, seven promises. And here, and they that overcome, referring to God's people, how did they overcome? By the blood of the Lamb. By the word of their testimony. Now, it wasn't that the word of the testimony now is put seemingly here on a parallel, a par, with the blood of Christ. The blood of Christ is the basis, is the ground of why any battle, why anyone, even why Christ overcame Satan, you see. But the word of the testimony, that's the church's voice. That's what we stand for. That'll be our confession. That'll be our profession at that time. And that's the way that, and that's who you'll know who's overcome by man standing up in that day. There'll be no possibility of making a mistake or minding distinguishing between God's people and false profession. Brother, that will solve that problem.
Would you have in mind if a man is preaching and you know he gives an invitation? If he gives an invitation based on this instead of some of the invitation they do give, is that kind of what you had in mind?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
There's something really to it, and
that's right.
We do need to be sincere. The time will tell.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If a man's not willing, you see, a profession of Christ, you see these rulers, Nero, and of course Domitian was the worst, but they demanded that they say Caesar is Lord, you know. Whoever they were, and worthy master, and used all sorts of titles. Your worship, your honor, may it please your honor. And if his wife was with him, why, he had her incorporated in the address. All of that, he demanded that they recognize that he was Lord and God. That was on the coin. Caesar, Lord and God.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and share with a friend. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.